Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, January 14th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho lawmaker reintroduces bill targeting gay pride flags in classrooms. Law allowing state to prosecute undocumented non-citizens for illegal entry comes before the legislature again. And Governor Brad Little talks about taxpayer money for private schools at Lewiston event and also about his visit to Mar-a-Lago last week. Well, details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Republican Representative Jerome Crane of Nampa reintroduced his bill that would allow local law enforcement officers to check the documentation status of people they stop and create a new state crime of illegal entry if an undocumented foreign national is found in Idaho. Crane introduced essentially the same bill in the House last year, a couple of weeks before the session ended. It passed in the House, but the Senate never took up the bill. Crane's bill is almost identical to the controversial 2023 Texas law that would create a crime of illegal entry there. However, legal challenges from the U.S. Justice Department and immigrant rights groups have stopped enforcement of that law so far. Here's Crane introducing his bill in the House State Affairs Committee today.
What this seeks to do is we're going to be creating state-level offense for individuals entering Idaho from a foreign nation outside the designated ports of entry. And first-time offenders of a crime will receive a misdemeanor, and then that will allow law enforcement to document them. Currently, we had a case that happened to one of our colleagues during session this last year where a family member of his was in an accident. They don't have currently in statute, there's nothing that will allow them to document somebody. So this will allow law enforcement to go ahead and take fingerprints, do mug shots, do all of the things that we would do to document a person. They will then receive a misdemeanor for that crime. If they were to commit a secondary crime, it would go to a felony and they would face deportation.
Crane said he did make one change in his bill between this year and last.
I reached out in the off season to the Attorney General in Texas and informed him that we loved their Senate Bill 4 from the 2023 session, that we'd be running it back through. And I said, I noticed that you guys are tied up in the Supreme Court right now. Is there anything that you would advise that we change in the legislation? And he asked that we would impose a severability clause. So you'll notice there's a severability clause. He said it's just got policy and practice to go ahead and put that in there. So that's in there. There's also, upon passage and signature of the governor, it would be therefore declared an emergency and immediately go into law. He said, other than that, it's fantastic legislation, and it being tied up in the courts is a political thing. He said, so it's enforceable, it's constitutional, and it's going to be upheld and supported.
That was Republican Representative Jerome Crane of Nampa. The severability clause would mean if one part of the law is found to be unconstitutional, then the rest of the law would still be in effect. Democratic Committee member Todd Achilles of Boise had some questions for Representative Crane.
I think we're all agreed here that illegal immigration is a big problem. However, in reading this bill, I think there's a couple issues that I'd like to address as this comes back to the committee. I mean, number one, this just clearly violates the supremacy clause of the Constitution. Right? Immigration law is federal law, and states don't get to overwrite that. Number two, as I read this, I see a double jeopardy risk. We're criminalizing both illegal entry and reentry. I think that's another question I would appreciate you addressing. I'm also concerned about the civil immunity and the indemnification provisions. You know, we're basically giving government officials and contractors, I think that's important, charged with enforcing these rules. Basically we're undermining accountability. So I think we've got some risk there of government overreach in how this is written. And then last, if you could break down the fiscal note, this seems inadequate at $250,000 or a million from the general fund. If we have to train law enforcement, we've got to fund transportation. There's going to be incremental costs for the courts and jails and so forth. So maybe just a breakdown in terms of the math of how you approach the fiscal note. Thank you.
Representative Crane.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Achilles. I would love the opportunity to break down the fiscal note. I actually went ahead and procured what it would cost to house a member, what it would cost for transportation. Currently, Idaho, specifically ISP, has done a phenomenal job in the nation sending troops already being trained to the border. So I can address some of those at a full hearing. Thank you.
That was Representative Jerome Crane of Nampa. Achilles said Crane's bill clearly violates the supremacy clause of the U.S. Constitution, which allows the federal government to have laws that supersede state laws. With the committee vote to introduce the bill today, the House State Affairs Committee will hold a hearing on Representative Crane's bill in the near future. Representative Ted Hill of Eagle and Senator Christy Zito of Mountain Home, both Republicans, are introducing a bill that would ban the display of flags and banners in public K-12 schools in Idaho that, quote, represent a political viewpoint. The bill, which is clearly aimed at gay pride flags, has a statement of purpose, which is broader. The statement says, personal political beliefs disrupt the classroom and make students uncomfortable, feel unwelcome, and open the door to bullying if they are in the minority mindset. Third-party flags are an open political statement and do not belong in the classroom. The same bill died in the House Education Committee last year on a 10-5 vote after it passed in the Senate. The bill exempts U.S. and state flags, official flags of the military, tribes, school mascots, and colors, and recognized foreign nations. The House Education Committee will hold a full public hearing on the bill later.
This program is made possible by KRFP members and the Palouse Peace Coalition. Palouse Peace Coalition is a consistent presence for peace since 2001. The Palouse Peace Coalition shares KRFP's progressive values and hosts a weekly peace vigil Fridays from 3 to 4 p.m. in Moscow's Friendship Square.
Idaho Governor Brad Little made a stop in Lewiston yesterday as part of his legislative session kickoff tour and reiterated the point he made during the State of the State address last week that he expects any so-called school choice proposal that lands on his desk to include curriculum and standards testing. Little also spoke about his trip to Mar-a-Lago last week and about what he said was his excitement for the new Trump administration. The way the right wing of the Idaho Republican Party sees it, a school choice initiative is one that allows taxpayer money to go to private schools or homeschoolers, which are currently unregulated in Idaho. Most of the recent proposals in the legislature involved tax breaks to offset parents' tuition payments or homeschooling expenses. In his State of the State address last week, Governor Little proposed spending $50 million in taxpayer money for private schooling. According to the Lewiston Tribune, Little told a group in Lewiston Monday, "I did emphasize strongly in my State of the State that we want that to be accountable and transparent, and that's what we're currently negotiating on right now with the legislative sponsors of that legislation, and I'm confident we'll get there. I want people to be comfortable that if we're going to take your state money and give it into a choice area, that that is really going to educate Idaho kids. Number one for me is, has been, and always will be, public education and education in general. We've increased education funding by 80% since I got this job. And of course, the big part of that was teacher pay and teacher benefits, which is very important to Lewiston because you're competing with Clarkston right across the river." Little also said he wants the legislature to add capacity to his Idaho Launch initiative, such as paying for more post-high school training in trades taught at Lewiston High School and Lewis Clark State College, such as construction, plumbing, welding, auto technician, and electrician work. Little said Idaho has reduced taxes by $4.6 billion during his 6 years in office, and he will ask for $100 million more in tax breaks this year. As for his trip to Mar-a-Lago last week with all the other Republican governors, Little said he shared that he led Idaho in an initiative to cut regulations early during his tenure as governor, referring to the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, which Trump has announced would be headed by billionaires Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy. Governor Little said, "Idaho was Doge before Doge was cool." The department is so called because it will not be a federal government department at the beginning of the Trump administration, but rather an advisory committee. The Pullman City Council tonight will discuss alternative meeting times other than their usual Tuesday night at 7 p.m. time. The agenda item says, "This agenda item is for the mayor and city council to discuss the potential for alternative meeting times for the city council to hold regular meetings during a trial period to assess the feasibility if a long-term move should be appropriate. Potential meeting start times do not have to commence during the workday. There are no recommendations from staff at this time." The council also has a discussion item on the agenda for board and commission appointments. The council will also accept nominations and elect the positions of mayor pro tempore and alternative mayor pro tempore for 2025. The Pullman City Council will meet at 7 p.m. tonight at City Hall.
A coalition of Montana groups will rally at the Capitol Wednesday to advocate for the protection of Medicaid expansion, which legislators will debate this session before the program's scheduled expiration in June. The state's 10-year-old Medicaid expansion program covers 75,000 low-income Montanans at an annual cost of about $1 billion, according to KFF Health News. The state picks up about 10% of the tab. Kristen Stewart is an organizer for the advocacy group Big Sky 55 Plus and a caregiver who is enrolled in Medicaid herself. Many Medicaid enrollees do work, but Stewart says that work is often undervalued.
Medicaid supports a lot of people who are doing unpaid work. Things that, were we to monetize, you would see an economic boost from their production level, often more than the cost of their care.
The Gianforte administration already tightened eligibility for the program, cutting the number of enrollees by nearly 40% between May 2023 and October 2024. The program currently covers non-disabled adults ages 19 to 64 who make less than $21,000 a year. Jeannie Brown is a bus driver for the Belgrade Public School District, as well as a full-time caregiver and the legal guardian for her teenage granddaughter. Brown says if Medicaid expansion doesn't get reauthorized, she'll be on a slippery slope.
Because I'm 60 years old and I'm having my own health issues after being a caregiver, it's hard work and it takes a toll on you physically, financially, and emotionally. And I'm hoping these legislators really take all of these things into consideration and reauthorize it.
Any laws passed on the issue could also impact the state's behavioral health services, which Governor Greg Gianforte has made a priority.
A new bill aims to further reduce investments in fossil fuels by Oregon's public employee retirement system. The PAWS Act would impose a 5-year ban on new investments by the system in private fossil fuel funds. Supporters believe this move will help lower emissions and keep wealth in Oregon communities. Andrew Bogrand with Divest Oregon helped draft the bill. The group found that PERS fossil fuel investments have underperformed the market by $4 to $10 billion over the past decade.
Private equity has taken advantage, in our view, of public pensions, and this would allow Treasury staff the time and space they need to kind of course correct.
Last year, former Treasurer Tobias Reed, now Secretary of State, introduced a plan to reduce PERS investments in fossil fuels by 60% by 2035, aiming for net zero emissions by 2050. Bogrand says the PAWS Act aligns with that plan. Oregon PERS covers pensions for more than 415,000 public employees across schools, local governments, and 900 agencies. Divest Oregon says 60% of PERS funds are private investments, which is almost double the average U.S. pension fund. Oregon's treasurer, the newly sworn-in Elizabeth Steiner, manages the PERS investments, totaling more than $100 billion. Steiner says moving away from fossil fuels is not just about reducing emissions. It's smart financially.
The data are really clear that carbon-intensive investments are a risky proposition at this point, and that at some point in the not too distant future, they will not be profitable.
Steiner says it is too soon to say if she can support the PAWS Act, but she is having productive conversations with Divest Oregon. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
The day before he steps down as governor, Jay Inslee gave his final State of the State address to the Washington legislature today. Inslee told lawmakers to prioritize the needs of Washingtonians when they decide on budget cuts during the new legislative session. Speaking about what he called the dark days of the Great Recession, when state lawmakers reduced spending by $11 billion, Inslee noted lawmakers cut funding for higher ed, teacher pay, mental health care, and social safety nets for the elderly and the poor. Inslee said, "It's fitting to look at this budget differently. Abstract numerical cuts actually mean concrete personal pain." Inslee said Washington is a beacon of progress and the light of the world because of previous major policy changes, such as legalizing same-sex marriage, removing the death penalty, and banning assault weapons. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, it will be partly cloudy tonight, low 27, mostly clear. Tomorrow through Thursday, high both days around 40, low 28 Wednesday night. 20% chance of snow showers after 10 p.m. Thursday night, otherwise mostly cloudy, low 24, mostly sunny on Friday, high 32. Current temperature is 34 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know that your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can also adopt a DJ, and there's a PayPal option. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Coming up next is Flashpoints. After Flashpoints, we'll return to the U.S. Senate confirmation hearings for President Trump's nominee for Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth. And that will go on until about 9:30. We'll have music with Brent Bent on 9:30 to 11 tonight. And if there's any remaining post-show for the Hegseth nomination hearings, that'll be on at around 11 o'clock. So stay tuned. KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online.